I think if anybody, does anybody want to ask a specific question they have about it? Do you have some?
About the text.
I was thinking about the example. The example of the crowd, which is seeing the stick, which is always against, and now they see the horse, and they say it's analogous to someone who's never heard of this, never seen it, they see everything, think or so on. They've seen the stick.
It doesn't say that. You know, it's not referring to that. It's not referring to someone who saw the stick and then saw the horse. It's not referring to, I mean, they don't emphasize. The example, you can't find, the example doesn't apply to everything going on in the show. You can't find, just leave it with the three states of mind. Don't try to figure out what's the stick, and you know, if it doesn't say, he probably didn't want us to worry about it. There are other schools who explain this example differently. It's a kind of commerce guy. But all he's not emphasizing that at all. He's saying after the spell is cast, that's what's going on. So he doesn't emphasize that. I think what might, yeah, any other questions?
Yeah, I was gonna ask the two bodhisattvas in the example of the last two types. The magician and the spectator are both, in this case, bodhisattvas, right?
I don't think the one who's the
latecomer, the newcomer.
Well, the definition in the text describes it as those bodhisattvas.
Yeah, the newcomer didn't say. Did it say bodhisattva?
Said a non-Buddha. Said a non-Buddha.
A realized being.
Okay, no, it's just someone who's perceived emptiness directly. It doesn't have to be a bodhisattva. I don't see why it should have to be a bodhisattva.
There's not yet a Buddha realized second one.
I don't think it has to be a bodhisattva.
Well, it distinguishes that the second one is.
He gets
so
it as
presumably...
That's what I...
Well, what I told Ariel was, in my opinion, it's just overkill. He could have said first to tenth Buddhas, but he said eighth to tenth, so you know it's really...
Okay, well then that gets actually even closer to it. Then in the four divisions that we learned a couple of weeks ago...
Yeah.
The last two people in this, which of the four divisions do each of those last two will reside upon?
1 to 10.
No, not the boomies, the four divisions.
Oh, it doesn't apply, because what I'm telling you is that the person who comes later is any Arya.
After
following
him. Both of them are any Arya. Two and three. The magician and the spectator have to be Aryas, because the definition says between periods of realizing emptiness directly for the second.
The magician, sure, and the other person.
Yeah.
They're both Aryas,
no, they're
that's
both
a
Aryas.
Given. But I'm saying, what's distinguishing between the two along the lines of the four levels that we learned?
Though it doesn't apply to the four levels.
The late comer, the magician.
It has to apply to the four levels, because
the
level two is an Arya. So they both have to be at least level two.
They don't have to be bodhisattvas.
But it's not clear that these have to be bodhisattvas.
All right, well, it says bodhisattva specifically in the text.
As one example.
Right.
What
but if they were bodhisattvas, then which of those...
Second and third.
Second and third, respectively.
No, second or third in their state of meditation, and second or third outside of their state of meditation. How's that? That's what it means.
It doesn't sound like it, because it makes a distinction. It makes it sound like that the magician, is the one who is on the second level, has seen emptiness directly, but while not in the meditation perceiving emptiness, still sees things as self-existent, but doesn't believe it that way. Whereas the third example...
That's why I didn't publish this thing, because it's probably incorrect on that point. Probably the third person also, the third kind of bodhisattva, also sees things as self-existent, but doesn't believe them.
What is it that distinguishes between the two?
If he's in a state of meditation on empties, he doesn't see anything, so it's kind of irrelevant.
Let me answer his question, because we're at a different place. Mm-hmm. What distinguishes the last three from the first seven is apparently not that what I said, that things don't appear to them as self-existent. It's that they've gotten to such a high level in seeing emptiness that they've abandoned the bad thought obstacles, but they haven't abandoned the obstacles to omniscience.
Which means that they still
appearing to them
right,
as
in two different ways. Right.
But very, very, very subtly. Mm. And that's the only distinction. But I'm still studying it. I'm still not sure, and that's why I don't want
to. Now, does that correlate to the three examples, specifically
roughly,
the last two?
Roughly.
It seemed to me that it did.
Yeah, I mean, it helps to know those examples, but we're really not talking necessarily about bodhisattvas.
Well, right.
Are we going to get marked up if we only put them bodhisattvas on the test?
Not at all, because I think the author is trying to overkill. I think he's trying to say...
Keep your mind on the bodhisattva ball.
Much less someone on the first seven levels, even somebody on the 8th, 9th, and 10th levels, still sees things as
something. By excluding, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it's restricted to the last three levels. And that's what confused you. And it also confused you because I introduced it wrongly the first time. The Prasangika have a different idea about the last three levels. And that's a long story. And I went through 25,000 pages of text on this, and it's still not very clear to me, so I'm still working on it. That's why I didn't publish the same.
Well, it's nice to know that.
And I've gotten different explanations from different people, and I'm not satisfied with them. Right. I want to study it. And apparently the Prasangikas and the Svatantrikas disagree about it. So.
Well, thank you for not marking me wrong on the homework and test,
okay.
Even though apparently I didn't get it quite correct.
Alright. Any other...
About the reading.
I don't expect you to digest all the reading. It's good that you read it. And it's important that you read it. But if you have any questions, then tell me.
Well, I mean, I just don't understand the basic.
Yeah, I don't think you
ideas that are in this paragraph and the
questions.
Basic ideas that are I don't know if I can even formulate questions. I mean, if you could explain that paragraph, which is page 3 of our reading last week's reading.
Top.
Well, I'll talk about
the top
a couple
one.
Things there. In this school, what makes things deceptive reality is partly that they are perceived by a deceptive state of mind.
Right.
They emphasize not so much that there's a discrepancy between the way a thing appears and the way the thing is, which
right.
is what we have been calling deceptive.
Right.
But they say that state of mind is not... that state of mind is not grasping to them as being self-existent, but it's infected by grasping to self-existence. I call it colored. It's like a glass, and it's seeing everything as rose-colored. I mean, it's got sunglasses on. The sunglasses are grasping to self-existence. But the eyes, there's nothing wrong with the eyes. The eyes see flowers, the eyes see the lamb. That's all correct. There's no problem with that. There's some other thing in the back of your mind when you look at the lamp that's wrong. And that's going on at the same time as the correct state of mind, which is saying, this is a lamp. And that state of mind is called deceptive. So think of deceptive mind.
The state that just says, this is a lamp.
Yeah,
it's not grasping.
Yeah. It happens to be infected by grasping. And it's always colored by grasping.
More
but
less.
It itself is not the grasping to self-existence.
But it's still more than mere appearance.
Yeah, and that's, I think, one key. And Ariel and I were talking about in the car, and we were reading the parts that I chopped out. I didn't want to give you 20 pages. But it was an interesting thing in the book. It said, why do we say that both conditions have to be present? Why does something have to be coming from that side, although not uniquely? Although not by itself? And why is it that something has to come from my side? Why are both things necessary? And the book says, if you know, help me if I can get it straight. Something has to be appearing to me from that side. It has to have a way of existing.
Right.
Of its own.
That's
although not a unique way of existing.
Is that when they say there has to be substance, but then
there has to be something appearing to me.
Yeah.
Because if there weren't,
then you wouldn't be,
it would be
in deceptive reality.
It would be self-existent.
You'd be mind-only school.
No, don't be mind-only school. I gotta get this straight.
That's the other
Yeah, if it were only from my side, then if I said pink elephants, they would exist. If I believed in pink elephants, and if I made up the word pink elephants, and I had an imagination, I had a fantasy of pink elephants, that would be enough for them to exist. If it didn't require the participation of the thing from its side, then anything I chose to dream up would exist. So there must be something out there for there to be a fact, an existence. It has to be showing something to me, for me to give the name. If it didn't depend on my side, and this is the important one in the Svatantrika, if that thing could exist on its own without my participation, then a person who doesn't know what a lamp is, and who doesn't know the word lamp, and doesn't have any concept of lamp, the minute he looked at that, he'd say, oh, that's a lamp. That thing itself would suggest lamp to everybody, whether or not they were familiar with the lamp or not, whether or not they knew the name, whether or not they were able to discriminate this as a lamp. You know, Eskimos see 17 kinds of white, 17 shades of whiteness in snow. They have 17 different words for different kinds of snow, which you can't distinguish. If the snow didn't require my participation from my side to be what it is, then the minute I walked to Alaska, you know, and walked out of the plane, I'd say, oh, that's type number 15. You know, because it would be appearing to me as type number 15 without my having to name it or discriminate it or distinguish it.
And that, but is that the grasping? Or the grasping the grasping
both
is
both of these are fine.
Fine.
No problem with that. Otherwise we couldn't live in the world. We couldn't say this is that. The deceptive state of mind in this school is establishing relative reality. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. But they say, if you're going to tell me that that thing has some existence on its own without my participation, well, then you get the 17 types of snow argument.
Okay,
then it would suggest itself to everyone the same way.
Right.
If just by appearing, it could exist. If it didn't require my participation in dividing out the things I are not it, and, you know, delineating it.
Then it would have self-existence.
Okay,
that's what self-existence means to them. And that's very important. Self-existence means to them, the lower schools, and most people think that thing's a lamp by itself. And they think, that's why you get into trouble at work. I mean, that's why the angry man is, and you swear, you feel great when other people confirm your opinion of the guy. You say, he's really bad, and they say, oh yeah, he's bad, I've seen that too. And you get really upset when they say, well, he seems like a nice guy to me. And you say, we just haven't seen all the facts. You know, you don't know what's going on. You didn't see what he said to me. You know, that's the root of problems. So that's Gakcha. Gakcha is a lamp that could be a lamp without me knowing it was a lamp. I think that helps clear it up a lot. It does in my mind. Because I have trouble too, and you're the guinea pigs, I've told you that before. The second time I explain this, it's very clear. The third time, it's okay. Yeah.
What is the flower bringing that makes it possible for me to perceive it instead of my just saying, oh, flower? So, but it brings something to.
Oh, yeah.
And what is that?
It is. It's appearing to your mind as flower. And if the existence of a flower did not depend on any objective reality from the other side, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then anything I could imagine would really exist. If it were only coming from my side, then anything I could imagine would really exist.
So then what is it again?
So there must be something out there. But the normal mistake that people make, and the way you get up from the last school to, or from the lower schools to Svatantrika, is you graduate by saying, hey, it's not out there by itself, the way all of us take it to be. I mean, if I say, is there flowers over there? I say, yes, of course there's flowers over there. Would there be flowers if you left the room? Yes, of course there'd be flowers. The flowers are out there? Right. Do they exist by themselves? Yes. They don't require anything from me. They're there. You hold that. You really do hold that. And that's a root of some problems.
Okay. But my question is...
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, fine. I need questions. Because if you're still confused, I need questions.
The question is, they bring something with their little purported selves that make us able to perceive them. I mean, they bring their half.
Right.
Now, what is it that they're bringing, please?
You could say, you want this school?
No, why don't we go right up to the...
They're bringing a way of... they're bringing an appearance of flowers. Okay, but not a unique appearance of flowers. Not such a concrete appearance of flowers that anyone who walked in here would say, oh, daisies, white carnations, even some African who didn't know English, you know. If they had that strong of an identity, as you actually instinctively think they do, then they would be flowers to everybody.
In
exactly the same
way.
But
it's not.
What they bring to you is a suggestion of flowers to the mind which has been taught to discriminate flowers.
Maybe we could get...
You're asking me, divorce it from my mind. What is it bringing to the situation? And I say you can't divorce it from your mind.
I don't even know what it is that's bringing. But
the flowers.
Point, but
you want me to say, the flowers bring their color and shape to this situation. And then you bring the name and the discrimination of them as flowers. The point is that they can't be divorced. They have a way of being which they are showing to you, but it's not inherent in them or unique to them. It's not so unique that anyone who came in would see them the same way as you do. And that's what this... They do exist out there.
Okay, well, I don't want to take up
I want to clear it because I felt the uncertainty, and I had the uncertainty, and I went and studied it.
But you're just saying they have a way of existing.
They have a way of being.
It would be...
From their side. Yeah.
Well, they perceive...
They have an appearance.
Too, right?
No.
Oh, I didn't...
They have no mind. But they are appearing to you, is what I'm saying. It's not that you're making them up. That's what I'm trying to say. On one extreme, it's not that you're making them up. On the other extreme, it's not that anyone who walked in here would recognize them to be exactly what you would recognize them to be. So there's 50-50. There's something coming from their side and there's something coming from your side. And otherwise, they can't be what they are. And that's what they say. And they are rejecting primarily the lower schools and all human beings who wouldn't... If you said to a guy on the street, are the flowers exist over there? Do they have their own existence? Of course. If a guy walked in here who was from some other planet and never seen flowers before, didn't know what a flower was, had no name for a flower, would there still be flowers there? If you say yes, you have a trouble.
Do we all bring the same...
You say yes? There's something there,
which we
designate as flowers.
Right.
They would see something. Oh, interesting. Something I've never seen before.
I don't think they would even see they might not even distinguish those pieces of color from the wall or something.
So then there are things in front of us right now that we haven't seen before because they've come from other planets.
There's a white rectangle and there's some yellow spots.
They went to single batch.
Come on, they're not... If they're myopic and they can't see in three dimensions, maybe.
Let's go back to your cultural anthropology examples. They're much easier because it has to do with culturally determined perceptions, like color and distinguishing types of snow.
Even color. Mm.
Yeah, I know, but it's easier than making up people from outer space.
What if you were psychic, if you could see something, it was actually there, but
LSD.
Most people around you are not perceptive
just
enough to see
LSD.
It. You're not hallucinating. It really is coming to you, but only you can perceive it. How?
That's acceptable. That's acceptable.
But then you have to take that person's word for it that they're not...
Well, they may. I don't say that they can communicate to you.
But that would fall into...
Yeah, actually, you're not allowed to talk about those things normally in Buddhism for that reason, because there's no way to prove it to somebody. They don't know. There's no way to prove you're not lying. You know, there's no way to communicate it to someone else. So they discourage you. You know, they say if a monk can perform miracles, then he shouldn't do it very much because it won't help other people. It's not really any benefit to the person's mind. He might have a short period of faith because there's something amazing happened, and then he has to go back to his normal state. The education is better.
Can you keep you in school that way.
Let's say that you believe this. Then how does that help you get rid of your afflictive emotions?
I think this is in my opinion, this is not very clear oftentimes. You know, I mean, when I discovered what Tsongkhapa is saying, you know, when I finally understood what he's trying to say, I could see how it related to not getting angry to the guy at work, for example. I think that's the way. That's the way. You just realize that it's partly coming from you. Even in this school, that you are participating. That without you, he wouldn't be an angry bad man. That's your fault, not his fault. You know, if you're going to get angry, get regretful, get sad that you did something, that you are discriminating him in this way.
Okay, but let's say that you can kind of, I can kind of understand and accept the example with the flowers or objects in an abstract, logical way.
Yeah.
But how does that help when you're, say somebody is getting angry at me?
Right.
I'm not particularly angry, but I don't really enjoy this, and I really do believe that they are inherently angry and that
right.
It is really happening. How would I use this same argument in that, and then how would that help me get rid of...
That's it. Many times I've explained it before, and I hope that I don't explain it so many times that you stop thinking about it someday. But I'll say it one more time. If he were inherently a bad person, or angry... if you were inherently unpleasant, do you agree that there's people in the room, and it often happens in an office environment, who are actually enjoying him being angry at you? You see? I mean, you've had this sick thought yourself. We all do. You know? You're not quite sorry that he's yelling at the lady you don't like so much. You know, and it's not an evil thought, but it's a bad thought. And it must be a common thought. It's actually thought number...
thought number
9, 8.
Thought
number 8.
Anger?
No, it's bad deed number. What is it? Oh, I'm sorry, number 9. It's actually it's actually in the top 10 bad deeds, and it's precisely that. And so we must have it. It must, out of the 84,000 bad thoughts you can have, it's in the top 10.
84,000? Why, you counted them?
Yeah, yeah. So what I mean is. It's apparently very inherent in human nature to not be that upset when someone else is having a problem.
Right.
And even to take a little bit of pleasure. It's weird, you know. I've been in work situations where my supervisor would rather see something screw up to take the pleasure out of it, out of the subordinate screwing up, than worry about the money being lost by the screw up. You know, it was weird.
Yeah.
It's like a kind of illness, you know. Then that's so what I'm saying is, in one room there's one man who's yelling at you, he's unpleasant to you and he's pleasant to the other person. One thing cannot be both, and we're going to talk about that's the subject tonight actually. One object cannot be both. It cannot be good and bad at the same time. It's impossible.
But why can't we carry that? He's certainly correctly deceptive reality-wise, angry. Everybody can see he's angry.
Yeah.
It's just that his anger doesn't exist self-existently. Why is it that all of a sudden we have to drop the same thing we've been talking about all night when it comes to a person's anger? Sure, the person's angry. Everybody can see the person's angry.
No,
is
not,
the person
yeah,
angry
appearance.
Self-existently? No.
No, some people might not take it as anger. I'm talking about him being good or bad because he's angry.
You're saying we have the term flowers because there's these things that appear to everybody and everybody recognizes them as flowers.
I didn't say that.
Well, the definition says when it appears to the mind, yes, but no, we're talking about deceptive reality, okay? Which means that something that has flowerness or whatever the words you were using appears to minds that are not drunk or what have you,
right.
The same way. Okay?
No, not necessarily.
If they've been taught to discriminate flowers. And also, why would
if they
not
know the name and the concept.
Michael, why do you have to have one or the other?
So
why can't you, like, a body's made of legs?
Let me finish her question.
But we can't call these an elephant over here. We call them flowers. We'd be crazy if we called them an elephant.
Right, because they have no suggestion of elephant.
That's right. So,
that's all right.
When the person is screaming at you and they're turning red in the face, okay, why does your example break down there?
I didn't say he wasn't angry. I said some people see him as bad and some people see him as good.
No, no, but that anger...
That's taking it a step further.
That's the value judgment on the anger. Right. You're trying to say he's not angry.
Nobody says bad. It's just there's... when you talk about the flower example, you're distinguishing between a person who says, okay, they exist out there, and I don't... And
do some people see them as weapons for killing people?
Unless they have an impaired mind, I would think.
Not at all. No, if certain kinds of beings, if they walked in, would see these as weapons, dangerous weapons.
Okay,
weapons.
Now you're getting into the part that's like, I just accept that on theory, okay? This is the theoretical part, but saying, how can we take this example, which is, I mean, I don't...
Well, I'm trying to get there. Well, see, let me finish, and if you think it's... If at any point I say something which is not correct, stop me. Some people are enjoying him yelling at you. Some people think he's a good man. Mm-hmm. And you at the same moment think he's a bad man.
There's nothing.
No.
Don't answer. Did I say anything wrong?
Yes. Yes, you're taking the example one step further. Before we go that far, can we stop the value judgment on the anger discuss whether the anger exists or not?
No. Because she's asking me, how does it apply to your daily life? How will it help you remove your flesh?
Well, you're saying it doesn't exist.
What?
The anger.
I didn't say that.
Sure. Sure. It doesn't exist because you're perceiving it as anger, and another person can perceive it as being happy, so therefore it doesn't exist.
Oh, yeah, the anger is absent. The anger is empty of being either good or bad. I say that. I did say that.
Sure, but it's still anger. That's not what we're talking about. You're talking about the existence of the anger. You're saying the anger doesn't exist.
I said the anger was blank. I didn't say the anger didn't exist.
Well, when you see somebody as angry, then there's two ways to see them as angry, correctly and incorrectly.
Well, you can say the man or the man's anger. I don't mind either one. You're judging the man's anger.
If you say the man is blank, took that to mean he's not angry.
Okay. That's right.
I don't mean that. I say the angry man is blank. How's that?
He's
neither good nor bad. If he were...
Okay, but what's the analogous statement about the flowers then? Because now I've heard your example about the man not being good or bad for a long time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sorry, but, you know, now I... Now this one makes me think in a different way, and I'm trying to apply that back to the angry man example, and I'm having difficulty making that connection. Mm. Yeah.
So you want to explain, do you want to talk about how the angry man is blank as being a man or not? Or do you want to talk about it relating to your removing your bad thoughts?
Both. I want to find out how that connection, because I feel like at one end it's this, at the other end it's that, and I'm trying to find where they meet in the middle.
Okay. Since all the, how many heaps are there?
How many five heaps are there?
Why don't they say two heaps? Why don't they just say mental heap and physical heap?
Oh, that's right.
Because they apparently are so important.
Why are two so important that they get status to be their own heap out of 46 or 52 or whatever?
They're the emotions.
I'm going to talk about the object of those, which is something you feel good about or something you feel bad about. Someone who irritates you or someone who makes you happy.
Okay, but how does that tie to the... Because it seems like you're talking about this perception thing on a much subtler level.
Well, what I'm trying to say is, I am, but I've never done that before. I've always stayed on the simple
level of this.
Yeah. Will it help you? What will help you in your life? And what truly will help you in your life, and what you should apply tomorrow or even tonight, is that the man is not bad, or the man is not something painful by nature. He has no nature because of being painful or pleasant, because if he did, he would be equally painful to those fellow employees of you who see him as quite pleasant at that moment, who get pleasure out of what he's saying to you at that moment. Therefore, in that level, on that level and in that sense, he's empty of either quality, because he can't have both qualities at once, because no one thing can be bad and good at the same time, period.
Why can't they?
Give me one. But let me finish with her first. Let me finish with her. So on that level of discussion, okay, we can get into his eyebrows too later, okay?
His what?
Eyebrows, and then down to the atoms in his eyes and things like that. You know, we can do that. But on that level, that's the practical level at which it will benefit you. Now, where, if assuming that everything I've said is correct so far, that he is blank, that he has no nature of being inherently painful, or else your fellow employees would take him as painful, or pleasant, or else you would find him pleasant, then where is it coming from? Why do you find him painful?
Because
your perception.
No, because
right. Why do you see it as painful?
Because of my karma.
Because of the rose-colored glasses you were talking about.
No.
Not because of the eyeball.
No.
Because of the glass.
No. But isn't the karma the glass? Now
make up your mind.
Have it directed at you instead of have it directed at
you. You said yes, the guy is angry, but no, you shouldn't get upset about it.
The glass and the eye.
Which is it? What is his anger something that the eye would see whether the glass was there or not?
Yeah.
Or okay, yeah. Good. And then the glass is describing the relative value judgment, goodness or badness to it, which
no, I didn't
shouldn't
say
be
that.
There.
I didn't say that. The colored glass?
The colored glass.
No, is whether he's self-existent or not.
Well, that's what we're saying, whether his anger is self-existent, right?
No, but that's different than saying is it self-existently good or bad.
Michael's saying that we put the value judgment on it because we believe the anger is self-existent. That
no,
everyone.
I didn't say that.
No.
Sure.
I didn't
you
say
said that,
that
he
Did
really
say
is
that?
Angry.
Did I ever say the anger is self-existent?
No, you said our misperception that it is self-existent is what causes us to...
No, he said the misperception
that
he's a bad person.
Well, that's what I mean by the value judgment, that he's a bad person.
Okay, well, anyway... Who's forcing you to see him as... Why? Who's forcing it to be painful for you? Who's forcing you to see it as painful?
The karma of my previous actions.
Which were good or bad?
Probably bad.
Yeah, if pain is bad, then the karma was bad. That's so simple that it blows over everyone's
head. What about if you see him angry, but you don't get upset?
Yeah,
he's
saying that you can't do that.
What about if you see a person angry? I mean, I could see a person getting angry at somebody, and I say, well, this person is very angry.
No, I'm talking about suffering. He's talking about not upset. Like, you don't get angry.
Whatever, anger. You see the person angry at another person. It's not affecting you directly. The person is not...
I'm talking about cases where it does affect me directly, because I asked him how I could get rid of my emotions.
Yeah, but
if I have
that's
a bad
simple
emotion,
to understand.
I'm sorry, an example where I'm feeling a bad emotion. I'm asking him to explain how I could not feel the bad emotion. So we're talking, you know, to begin with, we're talking about an example where I am feeling a bad emotion.
Oh, no,
yeah, but I thought
you
gotta
divide.
That.
You gotta divide. What I'm saying is the pain, the painfulness to you, if it were self-existent, I suppose you should get angry about it. But since it's not self-existent, meaning that it comes from causes and that it's imputed on an otherwise blank person by your karma, then you should do something about it. Can you prevent it from being painful once the result has already come out?
No.
That contradicts all principles of causation accepted by science, accepted by everyone in the universe, accepted by all farmers.
Say it again.
You know, no farmer expects that after the corn has grown already and it came out lousy because he didn't put enough fertilizer, that he can now run and put fertilizer on it and it'll suddenly change. That's what is a big misconception about Buddhist teaching, of people who say, if I understood his emptiness, right now he would stop being unpleasant to me. That's incorrect.
Okay.
The result has come out.
Yeah, well, what about Michael, what I said before?
Yeah.
Excuse me.
It's just trying to say, well, you asked me to apply it to a situation which will help you remove your clutches, and that's what I'm saying, yeah. Relative to flowers over which you have no emotion, no feeling, you can't get desire about, you can't get angry about, you can't be hurt by them, yeah, irrelevant. Not talking about that. I mean, you asked me to give you an example that would apply to your life.
Well, what I'm really asking you to do, and I guess we should, I'll just ask you later, but what I'm really trying to get you to do is to... This seems like a different level of...
It is.
...of empathy that you're talking about. I'm trying to get you to get to the other level on.
But it doesn't directly help your life and you're removing your suffering.
This one doesn't.
No, not directly.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Michael, you've been back to what
that makes sense. Flowers, you know. Flowers and flowers.
I could have spent many days, and most teachers do, I think, talking about the emptiness of him, whether or not he's even there. And that's a valid thing to discuss, but it's not going to help. I mean, so where do you go from
there? So that
there?
Doesn't... So there is no connection there if you say... If you're
not directly.
Somebody else is empty.
It's good as an example.
Yeah.
Then you apply it to your life. But most people, I think, if you've maybe noticed that you've had teachings on emptiness many times, the person has explained how a beautiful girl is really empty, but it didn't help me for years. You know, so who cares? She looks pretty to me. Okay, so she has a different mode of being pretty than I thought she had. But it doesn't change anything. You know, Alex Brazin wrote this long thing about how the girl is made up of atoms, you know, and therefore I shouldn't have desires. And fine, but I look at the picture. And okay, she's made up of atoms, but I'm concentrating on the girl. You know? It doesn't help me. It doesn't help me stop my craving.
And
I think most teachings break down at that point. You know, you say, well, okay, so she's Adams, you know, what do I do now? And they say, well, she's empty, you know, don't have desires.
Well, I thought you were
but she's looking like
to see her as, you know, dissolving and rotting. And
no, that is not an emptiness meditation.
No, it's not a method. But it's not a
method.
Get rid of desire meditation.
No, it does not get rid of desire. It suppresses desire.
Yeah, but, I mean...
It cannot get rid of desire. That's why the definition Nirvana said what? The cessation which comes from
the individual analysis.
Perceiving emptiness. Right. It doesn't say coming from learning all the little tricks to think she's dirty and
trick,
I'm not going to
have
desire for her.
So would that mean that all these little tricks that we learn are really just...
They're very virtuous and they're very holy. Mm-hmm. And you should learn them.
You should try.
Because until you understand emptiness, what are you going to do? To have the virtue to understand emptiness, you use it. Shantideva didn't waste the first 8 chapters of the Bodhicitta, but when he got to the 9th one, he told you the truth.
And so when you do get to the point of having this intellectual understanding, then what, shift gears and leave that behind?
No, you in practice, you end up using both. Because you're not so pure or good, and your understanding of emptiness is not so great, that if you see a foxy girl, you're not gonna, you know, it doesn't work. That's why the path of habituation has so many divisions to it. It's getting better and better at applying your emptiness understanding to your practice. That's why the kleshas have, like, I don't know, 128 shades that you're getting rid of little bit, little bit, little bit, little bit, little bit. So you keep those other methods. But those are called worldly methods. They're called jikten bilam. And this method is called the one beyond the world.
Michael?
Jikten mendebilam.
Okay, so back to the example I said last time. If you have somebody like a Hitler or a Stalin or a Li Peng, mm-hmm. Now, from our normal perception, these people do tremendous evil. So you're saying all these victims, they just had bad karma, and Hitler's blank. You can't make any value judgment on somebody that has done such massive destruction. It's like, oh, he's okay. He's a nice guy.
No.
You know,
his true nature.
He doesn't have a true nature of evil, but everything he does is evil. You know, you're saying that...
Right. I would say the opposite. You know, I've had people ask me that many times, but I think you should concentrate on the opposite thing, which is that he, conventionally speaking, apparently speaking, which is the world that we're living in, he's hurting people. Now you can truly stop him with love. You know, if necessary, the thing is called elimination. The practice is called elimination. And you do it. But at that, when you do it, you won't have any anger, no hatred. I mean, what did the Dalai Lama say about Saddam Hussein in the New York Times last Sunday?
He said he thought he was a good bad guy.
Everybody's doing exactly what they hoped he would do, except for against us instead of the Iranians or something.
No, he said, where are all the people that gave him the weapons? They ran.
No, he said, my heart goes out to him, because he was under certain conditions.
He said he may be a bad man, but my heart goes out.
But anyway, I'm not saying, don't concentrate on it that way. Concentrate, it's your duty, Bodhisattva's duty, to stop evil. If you see any kind of evil, it's your duty, your absolute duty to stop it, to attempt to stop it.
But if you're...
with no kind of anger or hatred.
The example you gave is that, okay, if... when you keep using the boss, that's a very benign example because, you know, boss...
It's the one place where I can collect the most bad karma quickly in my life.
But you have to be more clear on that. You've been describing the boss and the boss's anger in an all-or-nothing kind of situation vis-a-vis your reaction to it, vis-a-vis your being upset by it, okay?
Right.
You're making it sound like there is no anger... Okay.
He never said that. But I perceive what Michael's saying differently from
you. I'm saying kindly that he's acting violently, he's acting mad.
Right.
And some people enjoy it, and some people it's painful to them.
And if I see that person acting that way toward me, you're making it sound like the only way for me not to be angry by that is to not see anger.
I didn't say that. I said precisely the opposite, and that's my dentist drill example. I say...
If he was truly angry, then... like that, right?
No, if his anger was innately painful, then would find it painful.
No, you've been saying if he truly was angry, then everyone would say, yes, he's angry. Look, I see he's angry. You're right.
If I wanted to go to that level, that's true also. But I've never gone to that level with you. I have no interest in going to that level with you. I want you not to collect that karma. That's all.
Jeffrey Dahmer, okay? I mean, maybe his mother likes him. But the victims, every victim, I'm sure it wasn't pleasant, no matter how pure their karma was, to be killed by him.
It wasn't pleasant to be killed by Jeffrey Dahmer. Definitely unpleasant.
Right, it was unpleasant by any living being.
Certainly by unpleasant to them.
Right, yeah. So I would.
And certainly it may be pleasant to him.
It was pleasant to him.
The same event.
But all the victims, no matter what their karma was like, I'm sure some of the victims were nicer than others, and they all experienced it as unpleasant. Maybe
their karma was totally equal. Whatever deed they did in the past to be killed was totally the same. They were in this life, you know, nice, bad, indifferent. This is why good people get hurt. This is why injustice occurs. This is the explanation.
Wait a minute, Michael. What about the Dalai Lama that I had to get out of Tibet? Are you trying to tell us that he did something bad, that he had to be out of his country?
In a non-high level explanation, yes. In the highest level explanation, if he is truly a Buddha, he's just trying to teach us something.
And he is teaching us.
And he can teach people better outside the country than he can.
Well, I agree with that. I think they're a little bit
and to say with certainty that you know which one is true is a lie. You know, you have to say it's quite possible he's Avalokiteshvara and he's trying to teach me something. It's quite possible he's a normal man who got kicked out of his country. I don't know. I really don't know. I can use logic to try to establish one or the other. And you'll learn those methods. We're learning them in New Jersey right now.
I think it was the Karnapa that was also killed in a car accident. How do you explain that?
From your side, you know, oh, he's Avalokiteshvara, he's just trying to help us, he's trying to show something. You don't have any proof.
That's why I don't believe a lot of people.
No, you don't have any proof. And that's why it's sometimes personally irritating when I meet people who are insisting to me that this is true and they don't have any basis to say that.
They wear the robes and therefore they have to be believed and honored. I don't believe that.
But there are ways to establish logically that he is Avalokiteshvara and that he is showing us this.
But
if you can't give me those reasons, I don't want to hear
about
them.
What about Michael, the guy who was killed in a car accident?
Or else you'll be more confused next time.
Yeah. How do you explain that?
But do you feel better about what we learned? I mean, is it more clear? I think keep your mind on the fact that if there wasn't anything going on from its side, then what? If it didn't require anything from its side, then anything I can imagine would exist. If it didn't require anything coming from the other side, then anything I can imagine would exist. And if it didn't require anything from my side, then what?
Then anybody would see it the same way.
Exactly the same way. it would be the same thing to a person, the example in the book says, who doesn't even know the word for flower or have any idea of the concept of flower. And that's a slatentical way. It's not the highest explanation. What's interesting is, and we were talking about in the car, although the explanation in this way directly rejects the very lowest explanations, that the thing exists out there on its own, it's not totally inconsistent with the highest explanation, the Prasangika. Tsongkhapa says that. And so you got to cook that. Okay. All right. We're going to start. By the way, that whole thing last week was supposed to be the first 15 minutes of the class. And I read it and I said, this is going to take a whole class. So I pushed my tray back to one class. And, and we covered all that in one class.
Michael, are you going to treat page 5 and 6 of 7?
Would
you go through where
you
mentioned the
Prasangika?
No, I'm not going to.
Thank you.
No. Basically, you just have to understand that, for example, to exist by definition is accepted by the Svatantrika, the lower Madhyamika, as something that really exists. And the higher school, the Prasangika, says, no, it's the same as being self-existent. And then you have to say, well, what do they mean when they say exist by definition? What do we mean by when they say exist by definition? And is it possible that we're thinking the same thing about that word and they just don't understand and I do, or do we really think different things when we say that word and maybe they're not so crazy after all? That's a whole other subject.
Just one point of information, that's something that confused me down on page 3 when you were in the bottom paragraph. When you're talking about first the seed makes every living creature, is not a Buddha, see everything. Every existing phenomenon, physical form, and the rest looks as if they were pure, discrete entity. The use of the word pure there?
Yeah, pure means self-existent. In Madhyamika,
okay.
In the study of emptiness,
and
pure means
self-existent. That's opposite of the way I think most people would think when they read this.
Right. It does say pure.
How do you spell Madhyamika?
On page one of that, the third line, talks about three of basic knowledge.
We're going to talk about that tonight.
Of all things that have no real nature of arising.
We're going to talk about
that. Meaning that they arise only dependently.
Right. Okay. We're going to talk about it tonight. Okay, tonight we start 5 different arguments for emptiness. And it's going to go into the next...
We're 20, what are you talking about?
It's going to go into the next week also. But I want to get through... I only want to get through the first one tonight.
With us, you'll have a hard time. Okay.
And it's called Chik Dham. Chik means one. Two means many. And Dham means empty. It's a different word for empty. And we're going to talk about that tonight. It basically means that if something were self-existent, it would have to be a self-existent single thing or a self-existent plural thing. It would have to be either self-existent in one or self-existent in many.
What does that mean?
That's nifty.
It'd take us all night if we're lucky. Okay? All right?
Singular or plural?
Yeah, that's easy. I mean, we'll talk about it. I'm not going to go into them. I just want you to know the 5 names, which is on your homework.
Okay? I'm just lost.
You don't even have to know what they are.
You mean the 5 arguments?
Yeah.
The
names of
the system. The names of the system.
I'm sorry, what are these 5 arguments for proof of the person?
Arguments for empty.
5 arguments in support of the system. This is Dorje, you know it means what?
Diamond God.
Lord of Stone.
Good. Diamond. And Sekma means a sliver.
What is it? A sliver?
Sliver.
How do you spell
it? I'm not aware that there's a text by this name. It's a diamond soup, diamond cutter.
No, okay. That is second way.
when you perceive emptiness directly, one of the realizations you have has to do with how close it is that the closest example in the world to emptiness is a diamond. And one of the reasons for that is that every sliver of a piece of diamond is pure diamond. It's totally the same as the whole piece of diamond. Any little shard of diamond that you take off of a diamond is as pure diamond as the diamond.
Isn't that be true of, like, granite?
It's especially true of diamond.
It would be true of a piece of holographic film.
No, don't make fun. Very holy, very important.
I'm not making
uncut
fun.
Uncut diamonds? No.
That's what I'm not. Doesn't matter. Either one. Okay. And they'll... This reasoning involves proving that things can't arise from themselves, can't arise from something else, can't arise from both.
From?
Both. Themselves and something else. And can't arise without a cause. So four possibilities.
Or something without a cause? What?
They can't arise from
the last.
Themselves. They can't arise from something other. Something else. They can't arise from both themselves and something else. And they can't arise without a cause. Yue means what? You know?
Yue.
Yue means exist. Me means not exist. Ke means to arise. And Gok means to deny.
Me just means not. No.
Me.
I mean me.
Me means
not.
Does not. Not exist, actually. It's different from is not.
Does the whole phrase mean not exist, or does it mean exist, not exist?
We'll talk about it. Okay. It's denying that a thing could grow. From something which exists, or something from something which doesn't exist.
You mean inherently exists?
I don't know. Don't get there. Roughly, denying that a thing could grow from a thing that exists, or from a thing that doesn't exist. Or both, or neither. Four possibilities.
You said grow, do you mean arise or like grow, like from the ground grow?
We're talking, those reasons treat all changeable things, all things with causes.
Arise.
Yeah. Can be mental, could be physical.
That's a different book.
Same way. I'm sorry, maybe I missed that. Mm-hmm.
Some spelling is before. G O G O K.
This part is the same.
For the third one, you say no or both.
Denying that things can grow or arise from things which exist or things which don't exist.
And you say both on either, right?
Or from both or from each. The name of the reason doesn't say that. The name of the reason only says denying that things can arise from something which exists or doesn't exist.
Well, how's that different from number two? Number two says things can arise from the number three. 3 says you're denying the thing can arise from directed.
Number 2 was what? Denying that things can arise from themselves. The number 2 is emphasizing whether it's from themselves or from something other than themselves. Number 3 is emphasizing whether they're going from something which does exist or something which doesn't exist. And we're not going to go into it tonight, because we'll be here on night. I'm just going to try to cover number 1, but I want you to know all 5 names. Okay. Number 4 is denying, Gog, that things could grow, gay, or arise, I should say. Through any of the 4, she. Possibilities. Mu.
Well, that's the mushi of mushi mu soon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, good. Stuck in your mind.
Denying
that things could grow or rise. I need the whole possibility.
And what it means is, and you don't have to know that yet, is that denying that multiple results can come from multiple causes.
Multiple
results could come from multiple causes. That's the first. There's going to be 4, right? Number 2, denying that single results could come from multiple causes. Number 3, what do you guess?
Both or neither.
Multiple results,
multiple
single causes.
Could come
right, right.
Yeah.
Okay. Number 3 is that multiple results could come from single causes. And you can fill in number 4 yourself. Leanna will give it to you.
But no results coming from.
No, that's not one of the 4.
Oh. So what's left?
Single results come from
single from single,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. These are, I can, I'll write the English up here for now.
That's the name for all together, please.
No, that's
no,
the name
number
for number
5.
I ran out of board down here.
Excuse me.
Sorry. By the way, I warn you one thing. The reading this time is very difficult. So don't get frustrated. Don't go crazy about it. If you could understand everything on the first shot, you'd be the first person in history. Okay, that's why monks spend years on this thing. And it's worth it. You know, the pain is worth it. And if you don't have some pain, you're not learning. And that's
it's our karma if we have pain.
No, that's the fact. It's the fact of it. It's holy, it's deep, and it's hard. And you need it. And it's very good for your mind to struggle with these things. After a while, you find your mind becomes sharper, actually. Better able to handle long thoughts. You know, long, difficult ideas. You'll get some better ability. Tendel Kijikpa, okay? Tendel means interdependence. It's what people call dependent origination.
Dependence origination?
Dependent origination.
Same thing, you mean? It's the same thing as
yeah,
interdependence.
I call it interdependence. For reasons which I'll show you someday.
Okay.
Ki means of. O-F. And Rigpa means reasoning. Tendel means dependency. This is basically where you say things are not self-existent because they depend on other things. That's the one you're probably most familiar with.
That was in the last class.
Yeah. Its nickname is Rigveda Gyalpo. You should know that. The nickname for the last reason, the fifth one, the one about dependence, is Rigveda Gyalpo.
King of reasoning?
Yeah. King of reasonings. Gyalpo means king. This is the ultimate one. This is the most powerful one. All the other ones boil down to number five. That's why you've always heard number five. The Lama doesn't have more than 24 hours to go through this with you, he'll say. He'll teach you number five.
What does it mean? I'm sorry.
Rigpa means of reasoning, and Gyalpo means king. King of reasons. The highest reason.
So king means highest in this case.
Yeah, number one. Okay. Best one. Most effective one. Tonight's class is going to run over a little bit. I hope you don't mind. Okay. Pretty much through all the schools.
It's 8:30, Michael.
I'm going to start the first reason. We won't run over. We'll run over like 10 minutes. I think we can do it. Okay. What's the first reason? I'll go around the table. Let me make sure everyone's got it right. Fran, what's number one? You're sitting in the bad seat.
After you job,
I think you're right. What's number one? What's reason number one? Or did you write it down?
No, I didn't.
Okay, Faith?
If something were self...
What's in, just the name of it?
Chittudra.
Which just means what?
Which is one many empty. If something were self-existent.
I called it in the reading... the emptiness of one or many. So that's all you have to know. The emptiness of one or many. That's the name of the first reason. Kylie, what's the name of the second reason?
Buddha Sigma.
Which means what?
Diamond sliver.
Okay. A sliver of diamond, and that's all you have to know.
How do you spell that word?
Sliver, right? It's like liver with an S, okay? It means a little piece. If you break a little piece.
Okay.
By the way, the classical sekma, if you're into this word, is when a wave breaks on a beach and these little sekmas come out of seawater.
Froth.
It hits the sand and then these little droplets of spray come out. Those are called sekma.
I think diamonds are slivers. Diamonds can be destroyed. Somewhere I read, like, all the diamonds or something can destroy it or something.
That's how you cut them. But nothing in the... There is no thing in the universe which is not a diamond, period. It is almost an ultimate truth, in a sense. Anyway. Number three.
Yume
Keiko.
Keiko.
Yeah.
Exists not to rise to deny.
Yeah. The denial that things which exist.
Are you saying the definition?
I'm just giving you the name, and that's all I want on your homework.
Okay, I'm sorry. Could you repeat it?
Prick up your ears. It's at the bottom of page 3 on your reading.
The denial that
things which exist. Or do not exist.
Oh shit, I remember.
Which exist or do not exist could arise. That was reason number
three.
Okay. Number four.
Denial that things could arise through any of the four possibilities.
Yeah. It's on page 4 of your reading, in the middle. It says, the denial that things could arise through any of the four possibilities. Vilma, number 5. What's just the name?
Tendril Ki.
ki rikpa.
Right.
Things are not self-existent because they depend on other things.
Yeah, so just the name of the reasoning is what?
Reasoning of interdependence.
The reasoning of interdependence. A.K.A.?
King of reasoning.
Okay. Also known as the king of reasoning. But you better, on your homework, you better call it up dependence, okay? King of reasoning.
I mean interdependence.
Interdependence.
Okay, one more step and we'll take a break.
When you call it the 12 links, it's interdependence.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about it.
The sequence.
Arising. Dependent arising. Dependent arising is wrong. Period. Yeah, because it doesn't fit things which don't arise. But dendo applies. We can talk about it. Okay. Now you get into reasoning. I haven't done it with you. One day, I think in the second course from now, the fourth course maybe, we'll do a course on logic, on Buddhist logic. You need Buddhist logic to prove the spiritual things that you can perceive with your eyes and ears. Otherwise, according to Dharmakirti, you can't even take refuge. You can't. You have no basis on which to believe in future or past lives, other than your nice instincts that you people have from your past lives. You have no basis of believing in them without understanding logic. So here you get your first dose. Okay, if you try to read the reading, you'll get a. Don't get upset if you can't understand it.
But it also doesn't
mean don't try to break the code if you can.
Michael, okay. Is this the same thing that Rinpoche talked about in Jersey, with the same topic?
Very similar. Yeah. Okay. So when you in Buddhism. You start out, there's going to be three parts to every logical statement. The first part is the subject. What are we talking about? And I always start it with the word consider.
That's one of the three parts of subjects.
Yep. The subject is the first part of any Buddhist reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to talk about? That's where they slap their hands. Kimba some chair. When you start a debate with somebody, you have to say, what are you talking about? I'm talking about Kenpo Sum. What's Kenpo Sum? The three knowledges. That's how you open every debate. The guy has to know what you want to debate about. Now, let's debate about Tom. Tom Chereche. Okay. So the first thing is your subject. What are we talking about? We're talking about the three knowledges. What are the three knowledges? You know the last one. What's the ultimate knowledge?
A wisdom.
Omniscience. So number three, you know. It's called knowledge of all things in your text. Okay? Knowledge of all things. You have to learn these three knowledges. Okay? You don't have it yet. We didn't do it yet. It's the subject of this book, actually.
Subject of the perfection.
Of the Abhisamma Ankara. The first one is called basic knowledge.
To me, you talk. No, just making a joke, stupid joke.
Okay. Basic knowledge means the perception of emptiness. Of course, you knew that.
No.
Directly, or?
I was afraid you'd ask me that, and my computer went down.
Which one up here?
Probably not.
The problem is, if you have the other one, you start to depend on it.
Probably not.
What is it?
I won't take a shot. Right now, I'm going to say perception of emptiness by a Hinayana person.
How do you spell Hinayana?
H-I-N-A.
I shouldn't say emptiness, please change that. Selflessness. Okay. In this school, they don't call it emptiness.
Can you say again, please?
Selflessness. No self. You can say no self, I don't mind. When a person on the bottom two tracks, the Hinayana, the lower way, when they see selflessness, that's what basic knowledge means. That is basically.
Now, to us, with our hat, that word means emptiness?
No.
We're not talking about emptiness now. You, you said something wrong when you said the perception of emptiness.
Yeah, I should not have said it. I should have said perception of self.
And it's got nothing to do with what we know of as the perception of emptiness.
Well, it's similar, but it's a different idea of what it is.
Oh, it's the same thing thought of differently, or it's a different thing entirely?
You said it's similar.
Same thing, misunderstood in a very subtle way.
It's not the same thing because it doesn't include phenomena.
Number two is the path knowledge. Well, we're going to give debate ground a bit of good. Path knowledge is, what do you guess it is? It's short of omniscience, it's better than a Hinayana realization of self.
How to get there?
Habituation?
No.
Tongla.
Close. The perception of emptiness by a bodhisattva.
Which is?
I like that.
A bodhisattva
tongla. Do the destroyers get in here anywhere?
They're bodhisattvas.
No, they're not. Not necessarily.
Not bodhisattva. Oh, no, we're not talking full destroyer. No.
Well, one minute we're in the Hinayana, and the next
minute
we're...
Possibly.
Yeah, I'm not, I didn't mention full destroyer, and I'm not talking about full.
Don't look at them, they're rough.
You mean selflessness?
Now we can see emptiness, because they think that the selflessness perceived by the self is emptiness.
What is
they
this?
Think, but I'm not going to talk about that.
What did you say path knowledge was again?
Perception of emptiness by poison.
And we're talking about the direct perception here, right? Or we're still
I don't want to bite on that. I want to check. I'm just going to leave it at that. Those are the three knowledges. This is, in fact, the main subject of this book that we're studying. And all the things that you're going to learn in the first course only relate to the third. We haven't even mentioned these two. You're not going to get into those two.
What will we learn? Which course?
In this 6 weeks. You are in the first... You're never going to get out of the first chapter. You're never getting out of the first third of the first chapter. We spend 4 years on the first chapter.
Which is the third part. C.
It's all subjects about C. Mm-hmm. And you can guess that. You've been studying the Bhagavad Gita. It's all related. These are all qualities that relate to omniscience.
We're not going to get out of the first two, did you say?
You're not going to get to the first two in this course.
First two what? I wasn't looking.
These two knowledges.
We're not going to get to those. We're going to just work on C in this course.
Right. But... Tonight, we're talking about... why did I write this? What's the first part of this? What's this the first part of?
Logic. Study of reasoning?
It's the first part of the first reason. The reason that things... The reasoning that proves that things are not self-existent because if they were, they'd have to be self-existent. We're talking about the first reasoning.
Singular form.
We're talking about the first reasoning.
What do you mean reasoning?
The first proof for emptiness. Selflessness. Sorry. The first proof of selflessness, which is called the emptiness of one or many, right? Okay, has this as its first of the three parts of the argument. First you tell the guy, what are we going to talk about? What am I going to prove has no self? The three
one or many.
That's my subject. I want to prove emptiness, but first I got to talk. I want to talk about the emptiness of the flower, the emptiness of the guy at work. No. We want to talk about the emptiness of the three knowledges. The emptiness of these three understandings. The emptiness of these three levels.
Would it be safe to say the first proof of selflessness, that is the emptiness of one or many, applied to these three things?
Right. A little bit. Roughly okay. But I'd rather say the first proof of emptiness takes as its subject these three knowledges.
For the purposes of our discussion, or always?
Always.
First proof of emptiness.
First proof of emptiness.
Always takes.
Takes as its subject. And that's, could be on your homework.
First.
The three knowledges. That's what they're debating about when they prove emptiness for this reason.
Always.
Obviously, you can apply it to other subjects later after you understand it with regard to one subject. And hopefully you will. But in the classical presentation of this reasoning, they always take the three knowledges as what we're talking about, as what we want to prove are empty. We've been taking what? Tonight. What was the subject you tried to prove with him?
Flowers.
We had disagreement about it. Was I talking about anger? Was I talking about the man? Was I talking about his goodness or badness? This is a confusion about what am I talking about. This is a confusion about the subject. You know, what am I trying to prove is empty? So whenever you use the first reasoning, you're always trying to prove that the three knowledges are empty. Because that's the main subject of this book, actually.
I want to clarify. Can I clarify our conceptual thinking? I thought we were trying to do a proof of emptiness, and now we're switching the tracks from focusing on emptiness to the three knowledges.
No, we're trying to prove emptiness of the three knowledges.
So are all five of these different aspects of emptiness we're proving? Five different ways of looking at emptiness?
Five different ways to prove the same thing, basically. Mainly the reason there are five different reasonings is that they prove emptiness in five different ways. But incidentally, they also take different subjects that they're trying to prove are empty. And the first one always takes these three knowledges.
Five examples.
Yeah, they're always trying to prove the emptiness of these three.
Could it take another subject?
Sure, later. You see, first you apply it to this subject, and then later you apply it especially to yourself, to John, or to Carol. Okay, take a break. I just want you to get this. This is the easy part. What are we debating about? The three knowledges. What are we trying to prove are empty? Three knowledges. As opposed to the flowers, as opposed to the guy at work.
Why the three knowledges?
Because the sutra starts off from that point. The ancient sutra starts off from that. And it's... Okay, you really want to know?
Yeah.
I don't want any blank looks. Don't write anything. If you ask me a question, this is just what happened. Svatantrika school believes that your mental consciousness is you.
Okay.
Liana is Liana's awareness of Liana's thoughts.
Okay.
Ultimately. Higher school doesn't accept that. In a sense, that makes sense. That's a driver. That's a person listening to the thoughts in your mind. It's not a bad position. So if you improve the emptiness of mind, you can improve the emptiness of you. And that's the emptiness which is supposed to save you from suffering. It's the emptiness you perceive when you perceive emptiness directly for the first time will always be the emptiness of yourself. And somehow that's very important. And if you want to know how it's important...
Start meditating.
No, what... Talking... I'm not... Actually, when you perceive emptiness the first time, it won't be about the guy at work. You know, what makes him appear bad, what makes him appear good. It'll be understanding what makes you appear in any way to yourself. Which is a very deep subject, you know. Why do I appear to myself today as depressed? You know, why do I appear to myself today as confused? You know, this is ultimately what will save you.
Michael, but you can only perceive emptiness in a deep state of meditation. You cannot
perceive directly.
You
perceived it tonight on many different levels intellectually, and that's very good.
So when you walk down the street and you think people are empty, I mean, you you have an image of these people like this. Empty body that is covered by... That's not empty.
Not,
emptiness.
Yeah, hold on. I hope, if nothing else, that no person ever comes out of these classes and ever says such a thing. That's the big pawn.
This is another pawn.
It took 10 years to remove this dirty idea.
It's important.
Some consciousness of people.
I don't think you have to worry about that in this neighborhood.
Have some... I
see why the brilliance of you picking this neighborhood. There's no chance that anyone will walk out of here and see these characters out there and think they're just empty.
Number two is the characteristic we are asserting. The characteristic we claim that the subject has. It's the characteristic we are trying to what?
Prove
about the subject.
Okay.
It's the characteristic which are the person listening to us doesn't see yet. Which is why we're trying to prove it.
Oh. I don't see it because you're standing.
Does it have a title, number 3, Michael?
Yeah, this is the reason.
Reason.
And all, this is your first one, it's like in your initiation, okay? Hopefully your life will be full of these in the future. This is what we debate about for hours and hours and hours in the moment. Every argument we use has to have these 3 parts. And you'll study the parts, and it's a whole thing. I studied it for 18 years, and then I found out what it was for.
The parts. You studied the parts or the parts of?
The form of some logic, form of logic.
Oh, the parts of logic.
Yeah, of logical reasoning. I didn't really understand until this year what the specific reason was.
Is number 3 the third part of the logical statement?
Yeah, that's the reason. Number 3 is the reason.
Let me make sure I'm covering the horn.
By the way, this could very well be on your quiz, even if it weren't on your homework, which normally I don't do. Now I asked Rujira, because she's the only born Buddhist. Are the 3 knowledges one or many? Are they one thing or many things? 3 knowledges. These 3 knowledges.
Uh-huh.
Are they one thing or more than one thing?
If you like, if you're saying 3 knowledge,
then
it's more than one.
Okay, good. So they are. Do I say that they are not many? Can I say that the 3 knowledges are not many?
Not logical.
No, they are 3. They're plural. They're more than one.
Is this continuing the argument? This is, you're now in touch.
Well, if I ask you, if I happen to ask you on some occasion, are the 3 knowledges one or many? I hope you'll say what she said, which was correct. There are obviously, there are many. They're not one. Many means more than one, okay? I could have said plural, but I didn't want to do that. Okay. Do they exist?
They are posited to exist by the statement.
No, do they exist? I mean, I ask you, do the 3 knowledges exist?
Yes. Of course they do.
Of course they do.
Somewhere.
In this school, how could you prove that?
How could you prove that they exist?
Yeah, if I say, why do you think they exist?
Because they appear and we perceive them.
Good. Very, very nice.
Say what?
Okay. Because they appear to me, because I perceive them. They're doing what they have to do, and I'm doing what I have to do. If they didn't appear to me, what?
They don't appear to
me? They didn't have to appear to me
to be the 3 knowledges.
I could make up 3 knowledges. If it's just from my side, I could say 4 knowledges. I could say 6 knowledges. What if it didn't have to come from my side? Then everybody who walked into a room where the 3 knowledges were would say, oh, hey, 3 knowledges. Path knowledge, basic knowledge, knowledge of Buddha. Hey, I know what those are. Even people who never heard of them. If they opened up this book in Tibetan and they saw the Tibetan word, they'd say, hey, 3 knowledges. Yeah.
Those 3
things.
Okay. So before I was a Buddhist, the 3 knowledges did not appear to me. At that time, they did not exist. Now that I'm a Buddhist and I've discovered them, now they do exist. They've come into existence.
You can confirm their existence now, yes. They exist. You can establish their existence because they appear to you and you name them.
So I really could not confirm their non-existence before I was a Buddhist then.
Right.
But they did exist because an unimpaired mind perceived them before you knew about them.
So I.e. a Buddhist mind. At least. Okay. All right. Well, I wish I could perceive them. Anyway. Okay, so we've established a couple of things. They really are They are many. And they do exist. But do they exist really? Do they really exist?
What do you mean, really?
I love it. Nice.
Right?
In this school, what do I mean when I say really?
Independently?
the way that most people think they exist, which is what?
Self-existent.
That's too simple. Be more specific to this.
Cock-chocolate.
Yeah, which means what? The opposite of what we just said. Which would be that they exist from their own side, in their own unique way of being. That's a fancy way of saying, they exist out there, I can see them, they're there. It doesn't depend on me. Those are flowers, those are half-ugly flowers. And those are daisies, and those are orchids, and those are from... They just are.
So it really means...
It doesn't depend on me at all. They're out there. And they have their unique identity, independent of me. Which is really what you think in the back of your mind. Which is really the way you color all the things that you see.
You have to know.
Is it wrong that you see those flowers? No. Is it uncolored? No. Is it tainted? Yes. Is it impaired? No.
Michael? Okay. Question. Do you mean to say, is it wrong that you see them as flowers?
Yeah, I mean, are there flowers there? Obviously they exist.
Right.
Do they exist the way the back of my mind thinks that they exist out there independent of me? They don't exist that way. Is my perception of them as flowers wrong? No. That's what we call deceptive perception. That's fine. Acceptable. But when I ask Laura Cyril, how do they exist? And she thinks, well, they're just there. That's unacceptable. That's your rose colors coming out. That's your dongzhen, your grasping to self-existent, asserting itself. Okay? It is not your deceptive mind. Your deceptive mind is just saying, these are flowers. And the rotten little, you know, hanger-on, or, you know, the little mental function in the back there called ignorance is saying, they exist out there on their own, and everyone should see them the way I do. And that causes problems. Conflict, actually. Okay. I'll go two more steps and then I'll stop.
Can I ask a question? You said number three was conclusion. And the logical
reason. So if I asked you on a homework, do they exist really in this school? What do they mean by really?
Self-existent.
Too simple. Be more specific to this school.
Independent
of those two requirements, that they are appearing and that I'm seeing them that way. Or you can simplify it to this, and I'll accept it if it happened on your homework, that they exist out there on their own with their own unique identity, independent of me. That they could exist out there on their own with their own unique identity, independent of me. Everyone should see them the same way I do. They are daisies and white carnations, and everyone should see them the way I do. That's what really means. So, do the three knowledges exist really? Do they exist independent of my perception of them?
Nothing.
Right, nothing. That's Santantika. That's the guts of Santantika. You just got it. That's kind of nice. Okay.
Michael, didn't you say there were three parts to logic? This is number four.
Sometimes you can have a four.
Joke.
I'm not serious. I'm not kidding.
What's no, because I'm
the fourth is optional. Step number four is optional.
So that's four.
Step
huh?
number four is a good example. You could say supporting example. How's that?
A good supporting example.
By the way, one quality of the example is that the other person should already have seen it and introduced to it.
What is it? A reflection?
Of an image in a mirror. Why is this a good example? Vilma, take a shot.
why is this a good example?
To prove that something doesn't really exist. Just use your first reaction.
Of what, a mirror?
Yeah, the reflection.
Why is a reflection a good example of...
For unreality.
Because it doesn't have any substance. Reflection doesn't have...
That's pretty good.
If it's a reflection of a glass...
What happens when a baby is in front of a mirror?
They think it's real.
Yeah, okay. That's all. To a baby, I mean, to someone who doesn't know, it looks like the person is inside the glass. The person inside the glass is not really a person, but looks like one. It's an example of something that looks real but isn't. Why do the flowers look real but are not? Swatantrika, answer, please.
They look real because we see them out there as existing on their own, independent of our perception.
But in
truth, they are real because they are dependent upon our perception as well as being there.
Okay, yeah. That impression, which is in the back of your mind all the time, and you have it, you do have it, is that they are objectively out there, independent of you. And that's the baby in the mirror. It looks real, but it's not. Okay. And that's all, and good night.